Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Created Listening Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Created Listen. And I am Chris Berkheimer, one of your hosts. With me as always,
I'm Luke Lewis.
Hi, Luke.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. All right. We got Jack Bynum.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, my God. Luke hates you already. All right.
Sweet.
I guess you're in a good mood, Jack.
I am in a very good mood.
All right. And we have a first-time guest, a very special guest on today. We have my brother, Matt, on today.
Hello.
Hello.
Very excited to be here. Thank you.
This is my only sibling, is my older brother. So
yes.
He's in town post-ACL festival, so...
Yes, it was a great time.
Yes, you got rained out for Adams for Peace.
Yes, we did. Sunday was rained out.
But
actually, flooded.
Flooded, yes. But The Cure was good. And
The Cure were incredible.
And Wilco.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. So yeah, there's our ACL coverage, people.
Very special. It was good. Go next year.
Yeah. So as per tradition, Matt is already ready with his Fab Five.
He came prepared.
Came prepared.
Well, somewhat. Thank you. So, are people usually not prepared for this?
No.
Sometimes people are still writing stuff like right at this moment. And we had somebody once do like a Fab Two.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I feel special now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you told me this morning, so
yes, gave you some heads up, and you understood it well because you think like me and thought this would be,
and y'all sound the same.
Well, yeah. And great minds do think alike.
Agreed. It's our blood. You guys can't help it. Sorry. So we're gonna jump right into it because we have plenty to talk about today. So Matt, why don't you go ahead and list the first thing on there, and we'll kind of talk about it, and then go to the next thing. So we'll spend a minute or two on each item.
Perfect. Thank you. I was just about to ask you that.
Yes.
All right. This is Matt Berkheimer, Fab Five.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Number one, as expected, would be music, and I'm gonna put / playing drums.
Okay.
So I'm gonna kind of split that one.
See, you could almost mesh it into making music. Although you love listening as well.
Yes, exactly. Thank
okay.
you. Yes.
People don't know, Matt is a drummer.
A good one.
And yeah.
Thank you.
Jack, who is a guitar player, knows and has played with Matt, right? You guys have jammed.
Yeah, we have made music. He actually recorded me and his dad.
Oh, yeah. Matt is, I will say a lot of things to get at my brother and push his buttons, but one thing I will say is he's a great drummer. He really is. In fact, you can listen to him. Is there anything online or what could you list that you're...
Because
you've done some recordings.
I have. I don't think they put that on iTunes. The previous church I played at, Emmanuel Baptist Church in Enid, Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
I was stationed there in the military. We did record, and it came out quite well, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever made it to iTunes, but it's called, what is it called?
I can't remember either. I know it's on my iTunes, but I don't want to mess with it.
I can't remember what it's called right now. Okay. I'm blanking.
But there's...
Something.
There's been... Yeah, I was always
a
big fan of your college band, Anemo.
Oh, yes. Thank you. That was... anybody listening knows what that is, that would be...
that
would be very obscure. Yeah.
Well, you won Battle of the Bands at Purdue.
We did.
I believe 2 years or just one?
I think they won the year before, and then I joined, and we won that year, too.
Okay, so.
Where's Purdue?
Of course.
Huh?
Where's Purdue?
It's West Lafayette, Indiana.
Indiana.
Northwest of Indianapolis.
Oh.
It's a college.
It's college.
Yeah, it's a college, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah. University.
Universidad. And Matt, do you have any? I am curious about this. Do you have any bands on your list?
I do.
Okay, then we'll not ask about your favorite bands. We'll just move on.
Yeah, I mean, I hated to only put one, but
yeah. That's the thing about the five is you really gotta choose.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Okay, next, and this is in no particular order. I'm going with Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I've become a fan, big fan recently.
Yes,
big fan.
What Hemingway have you read?
I read The Old Man and the Sea probably in high school, but recently I read The Sun Also Rises,
mm-hmm.
and, oh God, I'm blanking.
For Whom the Bell Tolls?
No, it wasn't. It's okay. Farewell to Arms.
Farewell, yes.
Was amazing.
That is about the Spanish Civil War.
No, that's right? World War I.
World War I, okay.
Yes.
And then Sun Also Rises about bullfighting.
Indeed.
Yes.
The Running of the Bulls.
I have read that one.
It's good. It's not as good as Farewell to Arms.
I don't think I've read Farewell to Arms.
Yeah, it's World War One. It's actually, he was actually in World War One and injured.
Right.
As is the character. So I think it's based a lot on his actual life experiences. Yes. He falls in love with the nurse.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very captivating love story, actually.
Yes, it is. And I think the thing I love about Hemingway is the, he's got a good manly side.
He does.
And he also has the love stories, but he, you know, he's all about the outdoors and, you know, wars and things.
I think you could say like a manly artist, like he knew his art form,
I think so.
But that didn't mean he slipped into being, someone who didn't go shoot guns and someone who
pansy.
Yeah, to a pansy. There you go.
Yes. Man's man, also artistic. I like to think of myself in the same light.
There you go.
Not at that level, but maybe one day.
But you are an avid gun fan.
I do like guns. I don't know if I'd say avid, but yeah. Okay. Well, maybe. Yeah.
You got a few.
I like to shoot guns.
You like to shoot guns, and then you do like to make music, so.
True.
You're living the dream.
You're on the same path.
And you're on the same path. Thank that's you. That's a good way to put it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Have you seen Midnight in Paris? You have seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, man.
Which is a shame, because it's on my list on my iPhone here of movies to see. And
movies your brothers told you to see.
Yes, and I just need to break down. I was waiting for it to get on Netflix, but it's not on there.
It's not coming.
It's not?
Probably not.
Okay. Well, I'll just buy it or something.
Yeah.
Please do.
Or you can buy it for me for Christmas.
I could do that. Stocking stuffer. Like
$10.
Everybody in our family has seen that movie except for you and loves it. So,
good.
Including your sister-in-law.
Awesome.
All right. What's number three?
Number three.
Numero
tres. Apple products.
Yes. Oh, okay. Luke, you have to talk on this one.
He's looking behind a Dell, so I don't know if this is going to be good.
I don't like this monitor. That's for the record.
Okay.
But yeah, that's cool.
That's
you
cool.
Like Apple products? That's cool.
I do.
You may like other things in a few years, but yeah.
Yeah, now that Jobs is gone, a lot of people are wondering.
Mostly me.
He was a visionary, of course.
You have a 5.
I have the 5, yes.
You have the 5. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
or a 5. I don't know. It's not the only 5.
Yes.
it will be soon.
Yeah.
But you bought our mom an iPad.
I did. Well, I have like mom and dad money, too.
Oh, yeah.
It was part of that.
But she now loves her iPad, so that was a good choice.
Thank you. She's quite addicted to it.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say on Apple products?
I like Apple products.
You love going to the Apple store whenever you're here in town.
Yeah, once I converted. I mean, I kind of hated on them back in the day, once I converted, I couldn't go. I mean, especially with the OS and, you know, because I have a Mac laptop now.
Once you go Mac, you never
can't
go back.
Can't go back because, I mean, it's like the best way, like any real business uses a Mac, you know what I mean? Like, and then like all the
Texas Goodwill that I work for.
Yeah, not my job. I wish.
Well, it really depends on the business.
Well,
it depends.
If you're,
but like all the editing, like I've worked on a couple of like at film places. Like I went to the UT film school for like a field trip. All their editing, all the any technology related thing was Macs.
Yeah,
it was just Macs
everywhere. That's because there's a lot of great audio applications for Macs and video editing too.
Definitely.
So
Well, I don't necessarily need a Mac for what I do, but it's just easy and honestly, it's never crashed on me.
That's what I mean. A lot of bands, that's what they're doing now, is they use their Mac to edit their CDs and release it online, and they don't have to deal with the middleman anymore. Really.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Sure. All right, what's next?
Awesome.
Number four?
Yes, number four, yes. Wilco.
Wilco, all right.
As you mentioned earlier.
I thought they might show up.
Good segue. And the reason being is, yes, they are one of my favorite bands, and I just saw them at ACL, so as you said, and I mean, I could have picked some other bands, but yeah.
If someone's never listened to Wilco, which album do they start with?
Me.
Oh, man.
You've never listened to Wilco?
I've never
Wilco's
listened
got some
Wilco.
Good
Does
stuff.
Does it stand for something, or is it just
Wilco? Actually, I'm glad you asked.
That's,
because Wilco is actually a, I was an air traffic controller in the Air Force, and Wilco is a phrase you use, it means will comply.
Huh?
So say you tell a pilot to, you know, climb or descend, if he says Wilco, that means he's going to do it.
Oh,
it's like a short form, so it's like radio terminology, and I think that's where they got it from.
Oh, yeah. I believe so.
Yeah.
What album should I start with?
Depends on what kind of music you like.
I like quite a different.
Well, I know you
music.
Do as a musician.
But like, I don't. I'm not into the abstract stuff.
I know the one I would
start with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. Is that what you're going to say?
I was going to say Ghost Is Born.
Ghost Is Born is probably my favorite, but
that's my favorite.
It is a little bit more obscure.
It's true.
So Yankee Hotel Foxtrot and Ghost Is Born.
Yes. Ghost Is Born, yeah.
Those are two great albums.
Okay.
If you just buy those, you won't regret it. You may not like them at first, but you'll pick them up like a year later and be like, holy crap, this is like it.
Well, like, cause I just got The Strokes, like, This Is It. Is This It? Like, the
is that
first,
like their big
popular that was one? That was their first album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of in a, like, that sort of phase, like, Brit rock or, like, whatever it's called. I'm kind of into that at the moment. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're not that.
They're not that. Okay.
But they are awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but that's a good record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All that's right. Number five.
And finally.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. New Orleans Saints football. Who dat?
Yeah.
Who dat?
There you go. Who dat?
The third football team mentioned in a Fab Five, actually.
What was the first one?
Dallas Cowboys. Then your ad did Green Bay Packers. Okay. And now.
It's just getting progressively better.
Thank you. I like
Jack did one of the football mentions.
Now, I'll mention that Drew Brees went to my alma mater, Purdue University, which is how I got into him. I'm a big fan of Drew Brees. Wow. So yes, I'm a big Saints fan, and you know, it's football season, so
sweet. My aunt taught at Purdue, actually.
Really?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And you didn't even know where it was.
You had all these questions.
I had no
about
idea.
It,
then... I thought Purdue was in California, to be honest.
That would have been cool if it were, actually.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had all those sledding stories.
That's true.
Yeah. So
that's it.
The Saints, yeah, you're a big fan. You love Drew Brees. I don't blame you. He's a good quarterback.
He's a good dude. He's a
seems
Christian.
Like a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a great leader.
He's grounded.
Good role model. Yeah,
yeah. And you've definitely tilted me more towards I root for the Saints now when I watch them. So
thank you.
Yeah,
and I like Sean Payton. I their coach. If he didn't know. You know, and they got a lot of good players, and they've only lost one game.
Yeah.
They're 5-1, so
in the year of our Lord 2013 is where they stand right now.
Yes, yes indeed.
All right, that's a good Fab Five.
That was a good
thank you, I appreciate it.
Evenly balanced.
Thank
it
you.
Is well
I aim
balanced.
For that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, moving right on, we wanted to talk about one piece of news here. Pacific Rim 2 is officially. I guess you could say greenlit. They are writing the script. Did you know this, Luke?
No, I didn't.
Okay, yeah.
This soon?
They are writing the script.
Wow.
As we speak.
It'll take another 4 years to make
it's going
to
take a little while. Yeah. Luke, I know, really loved it.
Yeah.
Jack, really loved it.
I gave it a firm B plus.
I will probably talk about it at the end of the year when we talk about stuff we loved this year.
Really?
Yeah. But Matt has not seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It just looked like another Transformers movie.
Well, see, it's one of those movies you have to experience in the theater. Like,
yes and no.
Yeah.
I mean, it did look great in 3D, but I'll just say this, Matt. It's fully aware that it is a movie where robots fight monsters. It's not trying to be Transformers.
That's what you were telling me.
Yeah. So Pacific Rim 2, just real quick, for those of us who have seen it, this is a good idea. Okay. Are we going with agree, disagree?
I think if they do it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was
because there's a lot of ways or they could take the easy way out and make it more about the fighting the monsters. What I think they should do, honestly, is take the Star Wars Episode 5 route. When they started was Episode 4, it was all kabang and big special effects, and then Episode 5 was a character study.
A little bit. It had the Battle of Hoth.
It had plenty of action, but it had equal character study. So
it's true. Luke does go to Dagobah and learn about himself.
So I think maybe if they took that approach, it would be very fruitful.
Luke,
liked the characters, but I don't want to see much more of them.
Okay, I'm exactly with Luke, because here's what I was going to say. Do it, but set it like 100 years later.
Yeah.
Do an all new cast.
You're talking about Pacific Rim 2.
Yeah. I think they should do an all new, because the cast really isn't what matters.
Do like the grandson of.
It, it, Yeah, not even the grandson. Just do a new Jaeger team. And,
interesting.
Yeah. And maybe do the grandson of like one of the scientists or something like that.
Yeah, remember that would be funny.
To really bring back the humor. But other than that, like, give me some new Jaeger pilots. Give me a Jaeger pilot from Brazil.
Jaeger bombs.
Jaeger.
Like, is that what they're really called?
No, they call them Jaegers because it means it's German for hunters.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, interesting. That's
awesome. They hunt monsters.
What I was thinking, too, though, is that the aliens actually come out to the planet to visit.
Okay, I was...
This war in space instead of on the ground.
Here's what I was thinking. Cool. Aliens come out of light speed out of nowhere and just drop like 10 monsters on Earth.
Oh.
And they're not fully equipped. They maybe have a few people still training in Jaegers, but not enough. And so they just have to step up to the plate immediately and then maybe get ready for the second wave. Yeah. Something like that.
If they went into space, it would almost be like, I don't know if you ever watched Gundam, like one of those old like animes.
It would be like Gundam.
It would be like Gundam.
It already is like Gundam. It's giant robots.
Yeah.
They're fighting aliens?
They're fighting... Aliens are sending over giant monsters, essentially. It's like an invasion type thing.
They clear the planet of the existing sea species, and then they reap the rewards of the planet.
The way I see it is the alien monsters are the aliens' versions of the Jaegers, of the robots.
Yes.
Yeah. The parallel. Yeah.
They're doing the fighting for them, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Because I want to move on real quick, because I don't know how long this next discussion will take.
Quite a while, I imagine.
Okay. We'll see. So segment two is going to be all about the movie Vertigo and a little more about Alfred Hitchcock. But in honor of Halloween, we wanted to talk about really we don't have a lot of big horror movie fans on our podcast.
Not really.
And for my money, if you're going to watch like 1 or 2 years ago, what I did on Halloween is Bethany and I just watched Hitchcock movies and had a blast.
Oh, fantastic.
That was a great day.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, and she really got into him. Her favorite actually is Rope, which is a real obscure one.
Uh-huh.
Takes place in one room.
Doesn't sound like something Bethany would enjoy.
I know.
Ironic.
She liked it.
Weird.
You can never tell with her. She's so weird. That's why she's married
to
me.
Women in general, but...
That's another...
So
we went there.
Yes,
well, like, Jack. The advantage of doing Hitchcock is like modern horror movies are all based around like shot like sorry.
Jack's talking with his hands.
I'm doing hand movements.
That's a visual cue for our listening audience.
Sorry.
No, cool. Keep talking.
Modern horror movies are based around the idea of shock and like blood and gore and whatnot. You know,
I would say that's the slasher. I think exactly. But right now what's big is like the Paranormal Activity stuff, the slasher stuff, pretty much all the stuff I don't like about horror movies. What I like
is thrillers. That doesn't require much character development or story.
But exactly.
Like Hitchcock.
Even so, even though it's not just slasher, it's still just feeding on that aliens or, or, you know, things in the night, things that go bump in the night.
Things that go bump in the night.
Well, like, and Hitchcock utilizes, I think, more of the thriller. Like, you know, suspense. He uses suspense in a way where it is scary.
Well, on the subject of Hitchcock, I was just going to list for you guys. We just watched Vertigo, so tell me if this lines up. Hitchcock believes there could be true terror in daylight.
Yeah.
Which I think the movies we've seen, definitely.
I agree.
He does that.
That's a good point, yeah.
He believed it's okay to let the audience know something the characters don't know.
Uh-huh.
Which is a big part of Vertigo without giving spoilers, and it works still.
That's good.
You know, he always did his cameos. That was a reoccurring theme.
That was funny.
He liked to blend the old with the modern day, in a sense that he liked to isolate his characters in somewhere that hadn't moved on with the rest of the world, you know? A good example is Psycho. It's this run-down hotel. And it's close to a modern superhighway, but if you get stuck out there, you're kind of stuck in the past, essentially. Uh-huh. So
it's like where time is not really a factor.
Or another example, North by Northwest, he gets stuck at a bus stop and chased down by this plane, but a lot of the other parts of the movie, he's like in the city, you know, where there's help.
That's true.
So he liked to isolate his characters in that way. And Hitchcock actually believed... something weird about him. I don't know how relevant this is, but he believed the sight of blood was actually kind of beautiful, And on the converse, he thought an egg being cracked was absolutely disgusting because it was like a whole bean, like a whole creature that you were cooking up at once. Wow. He thought, yeah, he had some weird things going on with him. But Jack and I were talking about this earlier. I don't know if there's ever been or ever will be a greater film director. I really don't know.
Probably not. I can't imagine anybody for the amount of films he directed, because he directed something like...
Oh, he started working
72 movies. I mean, like, big movies. He started working,
I want to say, in the 30s.
Yeah.
And his last movie was like 1973 or something like that.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah.
Realize he had so many films. I guess I haven't seen them.
And consistently. That was his key. He was,
all his good movies.
He was consistently good. Even some of his lower grade, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes.
Yes.
movies were still on par, if not a bit better, than all the other competing movies.
Yeah. I've seen some Hitchcock that I'll never watch again just because I'm like, it's a little dated or whatever. It's just not as good as this. But his American films, which if you look it up, he started in England and then came over to the U.S. and made a bunch of movies. All those ones are just top-notch. Some of the best movies ever made, definitely.
It's because...
Luke, you were going to chime in when I said best director.
I haven't seen enough movies.
You haven't seen it? Okay, agree or disagree.
Yeah, I'm on the same level with Luke.
Okay.
And I think he used a lot of techniques.
Yeah. He invented some techniques, too. Yeah,
he used a lot of techniques that really didn't become mainstream until, like, the mid-70s when they were applied by, like... Because I read Brian De Palma, Martin Scorsese,
De Palma,
Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, all in college, they studied Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah.
So that became relevant in the mainstream through all those directors. And then everybody who studies them, including myself... is going to apply Hitchcock's films to their own films. I was going to
say, Brian De Palma makes no bones about it. He just steals from Hitchcock, and his whole career is based on that, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, you could do worse things with your life, I guess.
Did he do L.A. Confidential?
He did. De Palma didn't do L.A. I don't think so. He did the one you like, Black Dahlia.
Okay. Oh, yes.
De Palma did Black
Dahlia.
Those
two movies are very similar. So
they are similar.
I was just about to say Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
Oh, and Coppola. I forgot Coppola. Francis Ford Coppola.
I'm a big fan of Ridley Scott as well.
So, Jack, do you think you've seen like 10 Hitchcock movies?
Yeah, but
or more?
Four of the movies, I guess, have been remakes. Like, I saw The Man Who Knew Too Much... But the 1937 version, which was when he was in England.
Well, he remade one of his own movies, which is...
that one. I saw that one, both of those. But I would say I've seen 10 or 11, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've seen quite a bit of his catalog, not a lot of his old British stuff.
His old British stuff is meh.
It's not really worth your time.
No.
Unless you really just want to study him in and out. But Matt, you've seen a few. You've seen North by Northwest, now Vertigo. Yeah,
great film. And I didn't even realize he did it when I first saw it.
Oh, North by Northwest?
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
It's great. I loved it.
And
Vertigo, this was the first time I had seen it tonight.
And you seem to really like it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that you can sit, 2013 and watch a film
from 1958.
From 1958. And honestly, it stirred me more than most films I see today.
Yeah.
It's got a killer script.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that script is amazing.
Well, and that's what we were talking about.
There's no
CGI, and there's,
Yeah. Luke, okay, you surprised me today because I asked you, I thought for sure you had never seen a Hitchcock movie, and you said you've seen a few. You just don't know the names of them. You just remember, like
specific parts.
When digital TV first came out, with all the conversion and crap, we got one of those boxes, and there was a second channel that showed old retro TV shows and movies all day long.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I saw quite a few Hitchcock movies, and no, I don't know any of the names.
Don't know. Do you remember enjoying them, or
all right. Yeah. I liked the parts where Hitchcock showed up, though.
Oh, yeah. I love watching for the cameo.
Yeah, his TV show, basically, that I was watching. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that's the famous where he comes in and he's like side profile.
Yes, the side profile and the famous music.
That's from the show?
And he would say, "Good evening, Alfred Hitchcock."
I remember he did, he did one, I think it was... with James Stewart, it was an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That's what James Stewart is. Well, it's about a guy who, during the Civil War, he's a Confederate guy. He goes to blow up a bridge that the Yankees are going across to, like, they're beating down the South. So he wants to retaliate. He gets caught and he gets hung.
And then,
but as he's going to go get hung, he falls in the river and he escapes and he goes on this long journey and he goes home to his wife. And then all of a sudden snaps back and he had really, all that had happened just in the time as he was going to go break his neck. And he dies.
As he drops.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's actually, we read the original story. An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
I think that's from an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which for my money is good, but it's a lesser version of The Twilight Zone is what that show kind of was.
Is it better than Tales from the Crypt?
Yes, it's better than Tales from the Crypt.
Of course.
I'm just kidding.
It doesn't have the Crypt Keeper, unfortunately.
No, that guy is scary.
That guy, he did scare me as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few last things on Hitchcock before we move on. I do want to say, like Matt had said, with just about any of his movies, it's a big misconception that he did horror movies. He really did like thriller, psychological thriller, and
dramas.
Even some spy movies.
Yeah,
dramas. But there was always dark comedy in them.
Uh-huh.
Hitchcock said Psycho is meant to be a dark comedy. Mm-hmm. Because it is about a guy that cross dresses, essentially, is a huge plot point.
It's
not
pretty funny.
Without giving too much away.
There might be
a cross dresser in it.
There might be a cross dresser. Those things work, and I wish people would use them more, like Matt was saying. That what terrifies you is what the characters are doing. What terrifies you is the decisions they're making and their ascent into whatever grave they are digging for themselves, you know?
I think one thing he utilizes really well is you go, like in Vertigo, you go the first, I'm not going to spoil anything, but you go like the first 45 to 50 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the plot is pretty, that's a great thing he does. You think you know the plot, and then the plot completely changes, and it changes your view of the entire first 50 minutes of the movie.
Oh, yeah, it was really like a mind-blowing moment there.
Yeah.
And, you know.
We'll talk about that more in our Vertigo discussion, but...
that I won't be on, but...
Oh, yeah. Give your quick review, Jack.
Quick review. 9.99999. Honestly...
almost the perfect film.
Just give it a 10
and get
it
over with. No, I can't give it a 10. There are a few discrepancies.
Don't talk about it now.
It's been tying for first with Citizen Kane. And I found this way, way more intriguing as far as plot, as far as character development, as far as camera usage, camera work, camera angles, than Citizen Kane. I know Chris will sort of disagree with me, but basically it beats Citizen Kane on every single point. And I know Citizen Kane is a very, very old film.
Oh, yeah.
But it got beat.
Well, it's like comparing gold-plated apples to gold-plated apples. They're both just awesome.
I thought you were going to say gold-plated oranges.
Well, it's I guess like, you could say that.
That's kind of what I said. Apples and oranges because it's
a little
different times, different... You know, I was talking to my dad this afternoon, and we were talking about those wide shots. Like you'll see...
When you see all of San Francisco?
No, more like in a room, see a wide shot, and there'll be two characters talking. Well, now I watch that on a... 27-inch screen, and I'm like, wow, this is so boring. But my dad told me, in the 60s or whatever, they had 45-foot screens, and it, put 1,500 people in one theater, So it was like they didn't have to zoom in because they knew what they were playing to. But on a modern screen, it looks more boring.
I want to go ahead and move on so we'll have time for this full discussion, but you know how Jack feels about it now.
I love it.
I do want to say this. Here's some Hitchcock movies. If you're looking for something to watch this Halloween or around that time and you don't want to watch anything too frightening, Psycho's probably the scariest Hitchcock movie for me, but it's still great. It has some amazing shots. Vertigo. If you're looking for something more light, Strangers on a Train is one of the best dark comedies ever made. Rope. Rebecca is a good kind of macabre, almost Victorian style ghost story. It's really good.
The Birds
is great. North by Northwest is really a thriller. There's nothing really frightening in that movie. Yeah. It's just it's more like a man on a mission type of thing.
Yeah, if you want kind of a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Yeah, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
That's
the one with Jimmy
Stewart. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
I think that about covers it.
Pretty much.
And if you want to watch a Hitchcock movie that is a romantic comedy straight up, To Catch a Thief
Really?
Oh yeah.
It's a story about a jewel thief, essentially, and it's a romantic comedy.
It's pretty funny.
And it's pretty good. And
I like it.
Cary Grant is in it, who a lot of people compare George Clooney to Cary Grant.
Charade's really good.
Spellbound.
Good mystery.
All right, we're going to wrap it up.
I could just keep going.
All right, we're going to move on so Jack can get out of here.
Goodbye, everybody.
So we'll see you in segment two. Chris is still here. Luke is still here.
Hi.
Jack is gone, but Murad's here.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy.
And my brother is still here.
Here?
I'm glad, because I don't know how often he's going to come on. So.
Oh, this is great. Thanks.
So we'll get a full episode of Matt. So jumping right into it, Matt hasn't been here for this, but typically what we do when we review a movie is do a spoiler-free kind of short review where each of us just kind of gives their own personal, like Jack did. And then with this movie, since it's so old and we to really talk about it, you got to say a lot. We're going to do a spoiler discussion after we give our own kind of personal review. So unless anybody protests, I'll just go first, kick us off. And Luke, why don't you go next?
All right.
So be ready. All right. So I've seen Vertigo 4 times now. We just watched it literally like an hour ago. It held up so well for me. And this is a movie that, without giving away too much, rewards multiple viewings because you will see things kind of in different ways, understand more about the characters towards the beginning, whereas the first time you watch it, you'll understand more about them after you've seen it. Hitchcock was so inspired when shooting this movie. I think you guys would agree. The camera work and just the scenery, there's some really awesome stuff going on. There's a great shot of a church where you see somebody climbing a roof and somebody else coming out of a door at the same time, and he kind of splits the camera angle. You know,
like on a corner.
Like on a corner, yeah, and it's so, really cool. It's been color restored, but the color restoration I think only adds to it. There's a great scene where he sees a woman in green in a restaurant that's all red. And it just makes her stand out all the more. Mm. And then later, there's an all green background, and she's wearing purple. And it really great use of shadows.
Yeah, I had forgotten it was actually originally black and white. I mean, the color was.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have. I totally forgot.
The color really added.
It was great. Yeah,
for me, the script. We talked a lot about this. I love the script of this movie, based on a book by a French guy who sold the rights to Hitchcock after Hitchcock got really mad that he couldn't buy the rights to another book by the same guy called La Diabolique, which was made into a French movie and is a really good French noir, if anybody's interested in seeing that. It has a great twist as well that you probably won't see coming.
What's that called?
La Diabolique. I think it's on Netflix still.
Oh,
that's
really?
Where I saw it.
I have to get that for sure from you.
Cue that one up. Yeah. Or actually, my list it.
They changed it, didn't they? Yeah.
Other than that, Vertigo is a Hitchcock movie with Jimmy Stewart, which is always a good pairing. And for me, there's really nothing about it that doesn't work. I think everything in it works, and I eat it up like my favorite dessert. So, Luke?
All right. Well, this is the first time I've seen this movie, and starting out, I was like, oh, this is kind of funny. 50s people are funny.
50s people are funny.
And
look at those high fastening pants.
Yeah, I know, right?
Short ties.
Well, you know, the saying about having to loosen your belt after eating.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
Until people got smart and put their belt below their belly.
Kept it down there. Yeah.
And yeah, so it was like, oh, okay, this is kind of okay. I like the characters and stuff, and especially the main one. And then the plot got deep.
Yes.
It got really deep suddenly, and that movie went from kind of okay to amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. So quite a jump for you.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. Very good movie. Mm-hmm. I would definitely watch it again.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Murad.
Well, this is also my first time watching this movie.
Okay.
Though, before we started watching the movie, I heard that this movie was first, or the most, what, the best movie ever?
The Sight and Sound list is a very well-respected list that's voted on by critics, and Citizen Kane has been number one there for years, decades and decades, and just, I believe last year, it was outvoted by Vertigo. So Citizen Kane is now number two, and Vertigo is now number one. Which it's to me, either one's there. I'm not going to argue against it. Yeah. So,
well, that's what I was coming into watching this movie expecting something. Citizen Kane, like, or worthy of being better than Citizen Kane. It wasn't.
Okay.
For me.
Okay.
It doesn't hold up to anything near Citizen Kane.
Wow.
It was a great movie. I will say that. The a few flaws I saw were just some of the plot took a little long to develop, which some of it worked out okay. Some of them, sometimes during the movie, it didn't work out so okay.
So you felt dragged on a little.
So, at some parts, you know, some parts were, like I said, felt okay to be slow because of the plot. I mean, it was still developing. But overall, I thought that the acting was well. It did seem a little forced sometimes. From one of the main women, the actress.
Okay, the actress.
She forced a few things I didn't like. But like I said, the camera work was fantastic. The the whole plot idea was amazing. I was very shocked by the ending, and I'm excited to talk about that later.
Okay, yeah.
But I would definitely suggest it. It was a very good movie.
Okay. Matt?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with pretty much everything y'all said. I mean, you know, first reaction is, you know, thanks for showing me that movie because it was awesome.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, so that right there says a lot. I mean, and I'm surprised I actually hadn't seen it before.
My brother and I have a good trading system. If he introduces me to bands and I show him movies like Blade Runner and Vertigo.
Oh, so. Yes. That is a good
it's a good system. We're going to get a fist pound
for that. Yeah. definitely. That was great. I hadn't seen a whole lot of Alfred Hitchcock. North by Northwest would be my favorite that I had seen. Strangers on the Train is good as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the story was great. I mean, that's what made it. Yeah. You know, and halfway through the movie, when the kind of the twist happens, it really just kind of blew my mind there, and I was like, wow. So I was a little bit dumbfounded during the movie in a good way, which was great. And I didn't try to anticipate what was going to happen. I just watched it. And yeah, I think the cinematography was great. The camera shots.
Yeah.
I thought the female actress...
Kim Novak.
Yeah, Kim Novak. I think she did a great job.
Yeah.
As well as Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart's always clutch, man.
Yes.
That guy knows how to act.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't say it was the greatest movie of all time, personally, for me.
Yeah.
I can see how some people would say it is, but... Yeah. It was a great movie overall. Yeah, I would recommend it. It was a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon, that's for sure.
That's a good point.
Sunday.
Yeah,
thank you.
I was going to say, it is Sunday, though, so yes, I wonder Sunday what we're afternoon. Doing. I wonder what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and give the spoiler warning here. If you've not seen this movie and don't know what happens in it, which thank God there are still people out there who don't, they can see it for the first time and not know what's going to happen, go ahead and watch it now. I think we all recommend you do. Watch this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
And I'm going to say this too. This movie was made to sit in the theater in the dark before cell phones, before anything like that, and pay attention to, because Hitchcock, this is the first big compliment I want to give it. He uses the camera to tell the story, which is what a good movie should do. If you follow Jimmy Stewart really carries this movie well too, because if you follow his eyes, his face, his moods, with the camera pairing with him to show what he's even thinking, I think, at moments. Yes. You know, what is his mind on at that moment? The camera tells you that. And it's not meant for you to just wait until there's a funny line of dialogue or somebody pulls out a gun. It's meant to be followed in the subtleties. And then, like the detail, Luke said, there's a kick in the gut in this movie. And I'm going to spoil it now. So if you haven't stopped listening, that's your fault. You find out that he's been duped. The first 40 minutes of this movie, almost, that he's been completely tricked, that a woman he thinks who she is, she's not that person at all, and a death is faked. And when you get that gut punch, then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I have to see what happens with this movie, exactly. You know? And it's fantastic. So I don't know. Does anybody want to say anything about just the camera work, or just before we dive into some maybe different scenes or anything like that?
I think the camera work was a little too obvious in some areas. And like,
it's not subtle in moments.
I might agree with that. Yeah. I might agree with that.
When they were in the art museum and they were going from bun to
painting. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I love that shot.
Yeah. Does it take anything away from the movie though?
No. It's all right. It can stand there.
He sees the flowers, and then you see his mind, because he still is a detective on some level. He sees the flowers and he goes up and looks at the flowers and sees the bun. And then it actually, if you notice, she's not wearing the necklace, but he looks at the necklace, and that kind of tells you like he's paying attention to the details there.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I think they could have been a little less obvious about that, because I don't know if this was just a thing influenced by the film, but I always knew the bun was going to match up with the painting and stuff, but I don't know.
I think that's you as a viewer partly.
Yeah,
just
I agree. Yeah, I would agree with that too. And, not the average viewer is going to be as intent on it, probably. Yeah.
And that may also, have to do with the time when this was filmed.
Yes.
It was in the 50s, and like nowadays you don't see that as obvious. You don't see those in modern movies, but in the time that was acceptable.
Well, here's what they would do now, I believe. If this movie was made now, here's how they would ruin it. Either he would whisper it as he wrote it, or he would narrate it in his head. He'd be like, the flowers are the same. You know, like it would just, it would shove it in your face to be like, listen, you stupid audience that can't pay attention to anything more than 10 seconds. Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's what they would want to do, at least.
I think the camera is better than that then. You know, it's just like, they didn't have to zoom in all the way for that.
I'll tell you, all right, if there's one thing I do take a little umbrage with this movie, let me ask you guys this one. There's a scene where she writes a letter and gives a confession, and there is a narration.
Yes.
Did that work against the film for any of you?
No, because
I'm trying to remember the narration.
Okay, remember you see a flashback, which I like the flashback.
She's writing a letter.
Where you see what happened when the wife fell, and Judy, who's the actress, she remembers. And then she sits down to write. There's Matt's Apple product.
It just went off.
Then she writes the letter. Did you guys find that at all, like being like, okay, we understand? Or were you like, oh, thank God, an explanation?
That's what hurt the movie for me a little bit.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Because after that point is when it started feel like getting dragged along. Right after she tore up the letter.
Yeah.
From that point on, for a little bit, maybe the next 20 minutes, I felt like I was dragged along because, I knew the ending pretty well.
See, you didn't know the ending.
Well, I didn't know the ending of the movie, but I knew what was going on. It started slowing down, like it was, like you just added another movie on top of it, you know?
Yeah, but to me, like Hitchcock, in a lot of his movies, we were talking about this while you were in the other room, Murad, is he believed you could tell the audience more than the character knows, that the audience could know more information than the character, and you could still make it work, and I think he does here. Because you watch, because especially, if nothing else, Jimmy Stewart, man, he really goes from protagonist to antagonist in this movie. He becomes the villain, essentially.
Yes, I thought that was genius.
His obsession, and he crushes stalking. That part. Yeah, he's stalking. I mean, he becomes a nut.
He becomes almost evil, and it
yeah.
But you know, blurs the lines between like almost mental illness and you know, good and bad, and what our intentions are, what his intentions are, and I mean, I even forgot that he was trying to get her to confess.
Right.
Towards the end, I thought he was just getting mentally ill, and I was like, oh, yeah, he's trying to get it. He knows. You know what I mean? I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
Because they did such a good job.
Yeah.
Going back to the letter narration thing, though, that was the gut punch of the movie. That's when the plot just
got dark. Well, for me, it's when you see the flashback she has.
Yeah.
Because and also you see she opens her closet and the suit's in there, and you're like, why does she have the clothes?
Oh, yeah.
But the reason that one never caught me as much is because you also see the car at first, and you're like, oh, it's just another thing to kind of throw you off the scent. But then she has that flashback, and you're like, oh, my God, there were two women involved in this here.
Well, see, I just think it was done too early, in my opinion.
And, too early in the movie? Yes. You wanted it to end with discovering and confessing almost.
No, I just think there was too much of, from that point to the end of the movie, there was too much of time in between. I think I don't know. To me, it just
you didn't want to see them date. You didn't want to see buying clothes.
I didn't
mind
seeing all that. But yeah. It felt drug out to me. Okay. For some reason. Right. And that's what hurt it for me. Not that they did that.
Yeah.
But the feeling that, okay, I know what's going on, and it just felt like this added more stuff in there to drag it out.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
I can understand that. A character we haven't touched on yet that I think is really the wild card of this film is Midge.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to say...
Yes, that is definitely the wild card.
The wild card of the film. You want to say anything about Midge, Matt, and just her character?
I don't know. I mean, it's weird. I thought it was interesting, and I even made the point as a joke, but about how he wants to take her out, and she's like, no, I got to work.
Yeah.
And then after he's like dating the other girl, what's her name?
Judy?
Judy.
Well, Judy, but it was Madeline at the time.
Yeah, he wants Madeline.
Yeah, that's the character, and you know, and then once he starts dating her, she gets jealous and she paints that picture of herself.
Oh, that part freaked me out the first time I saw it.
That was creepy.
I was like, I dread some crazy woman doing something like that to me, you know.
Well, the sad thing is I've had the similar experience in my own life.
Yeah,
I've had a picture painted for me. Just kidding.
Okay, all right.
Oh, sorry, that was humor. No, you know, it's just funny how, you know, he wanted to take her out, and then she's like, no. But then when he's with another girl, you know, the jealousy, and then she wants, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it goes deeper than that, too, because at the beginning of the film, he said they were engaged for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And then she called it off.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I saw this movie, too, I was kind of thrown off that it's called Vertigo, but it's not so much about heights and everything.
Yes.
And I'm still, to this day, kind of thinking about ways in which it's kind of like he's always taking a risk, I guess you could say. He's always on a ledge. You know, he's always on edge. I think those are kind of what they want you to think. And I just think that's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought the same thing, where the beginning is about kind of the vertigo, where the guy falls and he gets diagnosed with vertigo. And then the movie goes on. I'm like, okay, well, what does vertigo have anything to do with this?
Yeah, you know, he's not on any cliff tops.
Yeah.
But the scenes in the bell tower, I think, are very effective. And the effect Hitchcock does there, I think, gives you a good idea of what Jimmy Stewart is anxious about, afraid of. What about the ghost story in the background of this movie? Let me ask this. Did anybody buy it when the guy told Jimmy Stewart, I think my wife is possessed by a ghost? Did anybody think?
I bought it, yeah.
I did.
Murad bought it.
Well, okay. I didn't expect the ending. I'll tell you that. I mean,
right.
I was completely surprised by the ending.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I never thought the guy was a bad guy.
So, oh, really?
I truly believed that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Now I know she's possessed, but something was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of did too. Yeah.
It's and it's easy to buy into because it gives you this whole interesting history and you want to learn about this woman, Carlotta. And I love that when he goes mad, you see an actress playing her. Like, did you notice that? Like, she's in between the window.
Oh, yeah.
She's
at
the window. And then when they show the portrait, it's actually a woman, not the portrait. It's an actress sitting still. First time I saw that, I was like, that is creepy, but so effective for me, is that the ghost is becoming real to him, you know?
Yeah.
And Luke, you know, you're a big special effects guy. Did you like what Hitchcock did here pre-CGI and just all
of this? Oh, yeah, definitely. He took what he had and he made do with it.
Yeah,
it was great.
He made it work. And I think that nightmare sequence is still pretty, it's definitely catches you off guard now.
Yeah.
But I think it still has a bit of terror in it.
I agree. It was very effective, even now.
Anything else anybody wants to add to this movie? I just have one or two more things to say. But
I thought what's the character, the wild card character?
Midge.
I thought that was Midge coming up to the bell tower at the end.
Know?
And then it turned out to be the nun. I thought it was going to be her.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people say that to me, and it never occurred to me, but you were right, Matt, to think Midge should maybe come back in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Because the way she left, you know, and it was like, well, she's got to come back. I mean,
and kill Judy.
Judy. She left the movie pretty early. I mean, not
she did.
Too early, but.
Yeah, well.
I mean, she kind of just disappeared for like halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
I could have sworn she was coming back, and I even said that to you during the movie.
Yeah. That's true. The ending of this movie, well, let's talk about the end of this movie at the very end. So here's what I want to say before that. Did anybody else notice the... I noticed it more this time. There's two kind of false happy endings in this movie.
Yes.
Do you remember what they were?
Well, one was the note, right? Where she leaves?
I wouldn't say one's the note. Here's the two
well, it's before,
like, faux happy endings.
It's before he gets all obsessed and they're dating again.
Okay, there's... Yes, when they start dating, they kiss in... where do they kiss? In her room. And it spins around and he remembers
this is happy.
Yeah. And then they're going to go on a date. Like, she says, hello, love of my life. What should I wear tonight? You know, that's the first kind of false happy ending. Because to him, he's like, hey, I did it. You know, like, I'm cured now. But the other one is when he saves her out of the bay. He pulls her up and the waves crash. Or no, it's not the bay. It's later on. It's after they leave the forest. Anyways, they're on the beach and the waves crash. And he tells her he loves her for the first time. And you're thinking in your head, no, you fool, you know? And you're like, this is a terrible idea. But to him, he's like I've accomplished something. I've saved this woman, and we're going to wander together or whatever. And I just like that it really bucks that idea of, like, this happy ending that's so hackneyed and cliche.
It is a bit depressing.
It's depressing. I'm not going to lie to you. It's depressing. But
no, it's genius.
Yeah. Let's talk about the end of this movie then. So to wrap it up.
That part was weird, okay?
It was weird, okay.
The nun showed up, the girl runs out the window and dies, and then the nun just immediately goes to ring that
the bell.
She
goes to
she crosses herself and then ringing the bell.
See,
that's true.
My problem with that scene was, if you look at where they were standing compared to where the ledge was,
it
seems highly unlikely that she would actually fall off.
I agree. I think the ending is kind of a part where it's kind of weird what's going on in the proximity of the room and everything. But I think what the nun is supposed to represent is guilt to Judy. Because, I mean, it's a Catholic nun. That's a good representation for guilt, right?
It's pretty much the best.
Pretty much the best, okay? And she sees this ghost of her wrongs coming towards her that she did on this. Because she didn't want to go to the bell tower. She didn't want to climb the bell tower. She didn't want to remember any of that because she was involved in a murder.
Well, yeah, and she didn't want to face what she did.
Exactly. Mm. And so her demon all of a sudden faces her, and she inevitably dies.
I just think as a director, he should have put them closer to the ledge.
Yeah.
It just seems like she would have caught herself or something would have happened. Because they were good, like, 3 feet away from the edge.
Yeah.
Well, they were right by the window.
Nuns are really scary.
Nuns are frightening.
I see what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying. I think, though, that's a scene where I can forgive that just based on what's happening in the story there, what the moment represents. You know, I was thinking about it too. There could be an ending where, of course, they both live and they forgive each other in the bell tower and walk down and in.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
And I think, you know, and I wouldn't have even minded that ending so much because he goes through such terrible things in this movie. He really does.
Yes, he does.
But there also could be an ending where Jimmy Stewart falls and she lives. And that could be interesting.
I thought,
I don't know.
When he was climbing up there, his vertigo kicked in. I thought he was going to fall and die.
You thought he was going to fall and die.
That was one of my possible things, like, oh, he's going to die and she's going to live.
Yeah.
Well, earlier in the movie, I actually thought, like, when I still believe it was a possession.
Yeah.
I thought maybe the possession had gone into him and he was going to go kill himself next.
Oh.
So you thought
that nightmare was Carlotta, like, entering his spirit.
Actually, that's
a good theory.
That too,
that's pretty. I never thought of it that way, but that's awesome.
Because he went crazy.
Yeah.
This movie's like 7-layer deep dip.
I know.
It's very deep.
All right. I think that wraps it up. We're about an hour here.
Yeah.
Luke, you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
It's great to watch an old movie like this and it still holds up. And we recommend this as a good, scary movie this Halloween you could watch.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. Two thumbs up. Ladies and gentlemen, applaud wherever you are for my brother being on today. Came all the way over from Florida.
Thank you.
So
Just for this.
And we appreciate you guys listening. Follow us on Twitter at Creative Listen, and we will see you in episode 31. So
bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.